Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Ken again, aw yeah?
Aw yeah!
Aw yeah!
2, 3.
Aw yeah! Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, people from all over the world. This is Chad from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and...
smooth.
Or...
sticky.
You might just say... oh damn, you got me. Pleasant way to learn English. You guys use like smooth and sticky, you know? Wasn't too out there. But anyway, I'm joined today in the studio with the gang. I'll start with the legendary Mr. V.
Dude, you totally forgot from the last one. I'm not legendary.
You're not legendary?
Just Mr. V.
Oh, okay. Seemed pretty legendary to me. So we have Mr. V in the studio today, a.k.a. Ethan Zinho. Everyone calls you Ethan Zinho here, right?
Yeah. I don't know. They got that off of the Facebooks, I guess. And
okay.
It stuck. It's sticky.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, a.k.a., what does that mean?
A.k.a. is an acronym, which means it's just using the letters to symbolize also known as.
Okay, and Zinho, why Zinho?
Zinho is the diminutive,
yeah.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Diminutive.
Yeah. Diminutive form of saying like small, so it'd be like little Ethan.
Well, not the diminutive, I mean, because we don't really have that in English, sometimes
in,
it's
in
a
Portuguese,
y.
By the way.
In Portuguese.
In Portuguese. Or Spanish?
In Spanish, it's Ito.
Ito.
Well, it can be Ito, Tito, like
Tito.
Things.
Ito, Tito.
Yeah.
Okay, joining in the studio today with Ito Tito, a.k.a. Mr. V, and also our fellow Conrad.
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 What
Conrad.
Does that mean?
Comrade.
Conrad's name of a person.
I was mistaken because in Portuguese it's like, this is an English podcast. So with our comrade, Justin Murray.
Oh yeah, call me Justão.
Justão? Okay, so what is Justão?
Ão in Portuguese, right?
Yeah.
Even though this is not a Portuguese podcast, is a...
augmentative.
Augmented, is it called augmentative?
Augmentative.
Makes it bigger, right?
Mm.
Big Jus.
Big Jus. Big Jus.
Actually, that's what my brothers called me when I was a kid.
Big Jus.
Really?
Yeah, because I thought they called me fat.
Yeah, were you fat? Were you a little chubby kid?
Well, I used to fight with them and like sit on them. Right? My younger brother.
Okay. Your younger brother. Okay, cool. So they called you like, look out, Big Jus is coming down the stairs or something like that.
Yeah. I'm actually tall. I'm not that. I'm like 90 kilos. Like 1.93.
Kind of lanky.
Lanky? What does lanky mean?
It's kind of like when you're kind of tall and skinny.
Yeah.
Long arms can probably... palm of basketball.
Palm of basketball?
Yeah, like where you can hold it in one hand, slam dunk it.
I can palm a volleyball, but not a basketball. I can slam dunk a volleyball.
Okay, lots of vocabulary here. We're speaking kind of fast. So first of all, to palm is to hold the whole ball. But what is your palm?
It's like the center of your hand between your fingers.
Yeah, yeah. Justin can palm read, right?
Yeah? Not really. I'd like to learn, though.
Okay.
Can you read my palm?
yeah, I think you're going to live a long and happy life. Palm read is the people that read, they look at the inside of your hand, and they can tell your future based on the lines inside of your hand, right?
Yeah.
To palm read. To palm a volleyball would be to hold it with just the one hand, right?
Yeah, it's easier to slam dunk the volleyball when you can palm it.
I didn't know.
Slam dunk?
Slam dunk is when you jump and you rise... the level of the hoop or the circular metal.
But that's not volleyball.
I mean, basketball.
Basketball, okay, cool.
And you put that in with your hand on a basketball hoop.
It's like Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan's pretty legendary.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that guy is legendary. What does legendary mean?
Legendary means stuff of legend, myths, stories. Right? Yeah.
But it's funny because when someone is a legend, like Michael Jordan himself, he has so many great achievements and they kind of outweigh his failures.
Yeah. He had like a really famous quote that's talking about basically all the times that he failed. He says, like, I failed again and again and again. That's why I'm successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this reminds me, this is actually a big reason why...
You play basketball?
English learners, most English learners fail, right?
Mm.
Which is the topic of today's podcast.
That's right.
Five reasons why 90% of English learners fail.
Yeah, yeah. So we're trying to get to the root of the problem when it comes to learning languages, right? Learning English specifically, obviously.
So when we're talking about fluency, this is like getting to the point where you can actually communicate, right, with people.
What do you mean by root of the problem?
The root of the problem would be the seed of that problem, the main reason the problem actually arose in the first place.
It's kind of like the fundamental cause of it, right?
That's right. Mr. V, you always fill out my phrases better than I can.
So these problems, a lot of them
on your bowl there.
A lot of them are parallel to last week's problems that we talked about.
Yeah.
Because the English learning field is very related to the whole education field. The same similar problems, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It is education, right?
Yeah.
So, should we jump straight into these problems and start discussing this? I think it's going to be a very fruitful conversation, right?
Yeah, and while maybe we're not generalizing here, we know a lot of there are a lot of great teachers and great programs out there, great schools that do certain things, but these are general tendencies in the industry that we see, and this is why it's really hard for people to get fluent, to really reach fluency. Part of them, it's a system, and part of it is the way that people approach the system.
Mm-hmm. Psychological, lot of it.
Yeah. So,
are you trying to just say that we're not hating on anyone right now?
We're not hating on the teachers, but we hope to inspire them.
Mm-hmm. What does hating mean in this case?
Hate, when you hate on.
Yeah.
Haters gonna hate.
You gotta hate on.
Yeah. We should explain that very quickly because it's an interesting way that we use the English language, because to hate, obviously you know what that means, to hate someone, but it's the word like hating. Are you hating right now?
Or hating on?
Are you hating on? It's kind of a colloquial, it's a new way of saying the word hate.
It's a phrasal verb.
But you know, typically hate is one of those verbs that you never use in the continuous form. Like, I'm hating this band.
Yeah, like, you don't generally say I'm loving either.
Exactly, yeah.
Just unless you're McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you hate on, you hate on, it just means you're criticizing really harshly, really, really in a way that's unbalanced, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In a way that your intention isn't good.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you mentioned another expression, which is, haters gonna hate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very kind of ghetto gangster way of saying it. Like, haters gonna hate. It means that people that... it generally happens if you kind of go out on a... what's that expression? Go out on a whim?
On a limb.
On a limb.
Limb, what is limb? Another word for limb?
It's a branch.
A branch off of a tree, right?
Yeah.
What's a whim? I always confused.
A whim is like a fancy.
To do something on a whim?
Yeah, to do something on a whim.
Spontaneously.
Right? Spontaneous, yeah, exactly. Okay, sure. Yeah. My English is all messed up. So,
go out on a whim.
To go out on a limb means to take a risk. So if you go out on a limb and, you know, maybe you start some kind of new business venture and someone's like, oh man, you're going to fail. It's going to be horrible. You can say to that person, haters going to hate, which just means you don't accept their negative energies.
Yeah, and there are always going to be people who criticize you and who don't support you. So just accept it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the same thing in English, this is actually one of them we'll talk about. Is hate is gonna hate. Speak English, make mistakes, don't worry. Hate is gonna hate.
Yeah. So what was that movie? They ain't us because they hate us.
Yeah, this is
they
great.
Hate us because they ain't us.
Yeah, that's right.
I use it to teach, like, you know, like the word internet. Americans pronounce it like internet, right?
Okay. Say it a little slower because that word is very confusing.
The word internet, mm-hmm. we don't pronounce the T. So anytime you have the NT in American English with the stress on the first part, mm-hmm. on the previous syllable, it becomes internet becomes internet.
Yeah. And so, internet.
And so the same thing with like, isn't it becomes isn't it. Mm-hmm. So it's international. But anyways.
And what's ain't? Because it's kind of fundamental.
Ain't is, yeah, it's a very colloquial expression for like,
is not.
Is not, or sometimes does not too, right?
Or even like, it's any like verb to be with not. Like, I am not, you are not, we are not. We can just say, I ain't, you ain't, we ain't.
But it's there's very, a lot of people, it's kind of American, I think, more so than...
Oh yeah, definitely.
But it's ain't, ain't, right?
Ain't.
Ain't. It's a, that's, it's a kind of a stop T. Anyway, yeah. We won't go into that.
But it's a lot of, just like a side note with this, is that it's also a lot of people in the U.S. say that it's grammatically incorrect.
Yeah. Well, it is. It doesn't come from, you know, it's something yeah. that has evolved.
It's not traditional, but it's used so much that it's hard to say that it's not part of the language.
And it's in art and culture all over the place, right? Okay. It's like in music and so...
Yeah. Well, I ain't gonna question you guys, so...
Anyway, so like we talked about, like the word internet becomes internet. And so when you, even when you link two words, so ain't us, right? The and the T gets removed, so it becomes ain't us.
Anus. They hate us because they ain't us.
So anus is actually it's a part of the body, right? I'm not gonna
your butt, your anus,
the whole.
They get it. They understand.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is a scene from the movie.
The movie is called The Interview.
The Interview.
The Interview.
Yeah,
I didn't speak like that, but anyway, the interview is a movie by Seth Rogen, and the other dude's name,
James Franco.
James Franco.
You were drawing a blank.
I was drawing a blank.
Yeah,
yeah. They're actually interviewing.
Kim Jong-un,
the guy from North Korea, the dictator. And obviously it's a comedy, but they're bonding, and they're saying, they hate us because they ain't us. Yeah, they hate us because they ain't us.
Stop saying that. They hate us because they ain't us. What does that mean? We ain't us? Anyways, okay. We'll link that in the show notes, definitely. Yes. Let's.
We digress. A lot.
Let's get back on the ball here.
Okay.
On the ball?
Ethan's on the ball right now.
Ethan's on a medicine ball. He's on a medicine ball bouncing up and down.
It's not a medicine ball. It's a Pilates ball.
Okay, so the five reasons why 90% of English learners fail.
Reason number one, because they hate us because they ain't us.
No, that's number two, actually. But number one is because these classes are teacher-centered. They're lecture-styled. And they don't really give the learners a chance to use what they're learning.
It's usually very one-directional. So it's like teacher speaking to student. Student doesn't really get an opportunity to actually put the language to use.
And so, like in the traditional education and in other field, the rest of the education field, most classes are actually works better to be taught like this, even though it's not the best, because that is currently being totally changed right now, but into like blended learning, into like where students go online and they research and then come back to class for support, right? Mm-hmm. Self-organized learning environments. But in English, it's even worse.
It's big in a lot of subjects, but definitely it's kind of efficient. It's based on efficiency because, you know, you have so many people that need to learn English, not enough English teachers, so... It's a way to make it more efficient is just having this kind of lecture style where the teacher's speaking to the class, but it's not effective.
Yeah, it's like you have one teacher and a group of students, and they get up there and they explain the rules, the theory, but there's not really a lot of interaction.
And also the reason for that, like all of us think we have to learn a lot of grammar before we can speak, but that's a total misconception, at least for most learners. It's just because the theory, the grammar, is the easiest thing to teach in that kind of lecture style learning.
I would say even like related to this, it's part of the same problem is that even students will deposit all of their responsibility in the teacher. They think that if they go and they pay for the lessons for the class that they're going to get fluent. But they're relegating their responsibility to the teacher, to that process, and there's no they're probably not going to learn if they do that.
What does relegate mean? Relegating the responsibility to the teacher.
It means to release, almost.
It's kind of like to surrender, even, isn't it?
Yeah, to surrender, to deliver, right?
You also said, like, deposit their responsibility in the teacher. What would you mean by deposit?
It means taking it from yourself and giving it to them.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I don't learn, or if I don't leave this class with a good score, it's not my fault, it's the teacher's fault.
Yeah, so ultimately, I think a learner needs to take the learning into their own hands as well. And I think school can just be a part. Theory is just a part of the process. They need to be using it. They need to be out there actively pursuing opportunities.
It's a two-way street, right? Can't say that it's all the teacher's fault. Can't say that it's all the student's fault. But there's responsibility on both sides.
It does kind of go into what we talked about last week, too, about those different types of intelligences and different ways of learning, you know. Maybe some people are really good at being more practical with stuff. Like, they just want to get out of the classroom and do stuff, right?
Yeah, this flows into actually reason number... It was reason number three, but let's move it up to reason number two. the current system rewards certain styles, right? It's not tailor-made for the individual. It's not customized for the
individual. Tailor-made?
It means, like, made especially for a certain individual.
What is a tailor?
A tailor is a person who makes clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially kind of things like suits that are usually custom-made.
Yeah, they measure your inseam and make you pants.
So...
Cupping?
Anyways, that's a scene from Friends, but we will not digress.
Okay.
We could put that in the show notes, though, okay, in case they want to digress.
Okay, so if you do want to know what cupping is, we're going to post a scene from Friends in the show notes of this podcast, which is reallifeglobal.com/theproblem. Back to Justin.
Okay, so again, just like the formal education system, the education system that we talked about last week, in the English teaching system, English education system, ESL, which means, or EFL, English as a second language or English as a foreign language, the problem is, these are cookie-cutter programs. These are take learners, and they are basically cookie-cutters. One size fits all. We talked about that last week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
So it's not customized to the individual. People generally aren't learning because they have a completely different style. We just did a survey the other day with... We got 400-and-something responses so far since yesterday, and basically it said, like, 14% or only... 13 or 14% feel like that this is everything they needed. English schools was everything they needed to get fluent. 14%.
That totally makes sense, too, because, like, other statistics I've seen is that, like, 10% of people, the kind of, like, analytical information-based learning is what they how they learn best. So those numbers completely, like, make sense. So if this doesn't really... If this hasn't worked for you, it's not your fault. It's just that that's not your learning style.
And about 14% as well completely found it useless, the education system, the formal education schools for English. It was useless for them. And the rest, right, were split into two camps, right?
Yeah, where it's had some stuff, but it still wasn't enough. So it totally makes sense because all of us learn differently. Some of us are really good with analytical stuff. Some of us are okay with it. And some of us, it's completely just makes us fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more that logic-based learning, theory-based, mm-hmm. you know, learning the grammatical system and then being able to apply that to communication.
Yeah. Even, like, working in like, groups, you know, you mentioned earlier about, what is it, the groups learning, what's it called again?
Self-organized learning environment?
Self-organized learning environments, where it, like, actually promotes you to, you know, out of the classroom, actually talk to peers and talk to other people about what you're learning. I think that's one of the most beneficial aspects of learning. Even being able to kind of teach someone as well, like putting you into a teacher position, like, hey, tell your peers about what you've just learned, you know, it helps you to really internalize the information a lot more.
And this is sort of, this hasn't been applied to ESL or the English learning industry so much, but this is really important what you're saying. It's changing the role of the teacher from in front of the classroom teaching, you know, 8, 10, 30 students to the students engaging in learning by themselves, and the teacher being more of a facilitator.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. so the teacher is there helping them, guiding the whole process, rather than just standing there speaking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the students are acting because I think the origin of this, this teacher or this educational theorist put a computer in, I think, a poor area in Africa?
I think it was in India.
Yeah. In a poor area, and just, you know, the kids, there were kids around and they had never used technology. But he put this computer in the wall to see if anybody learned how to use it. And to everybody's surprise, the kids started figuring it out together.
Mm-hmm.
And they started learning how to use it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And they did like a... I heard a similar experiment that was in Africa that was like with tablets. And I think they said within an hour, the first kid that like got this tablet had learned how to use it and was teaching the other kids how to use it.
Mm-hmm. There's even, I think, even extending on that, again, there was another, I think it might have been in the experiment in India where they actually started to test how well they were at actually getting and getting new information. And they put some kind of test out there like, oh, we want you to find out this piece of information. And it wasn't something simple. It wasn't like, how do you fry an egg? It was like, how do you, something about biochemistry or something like kind of more complex like that.
Yeah.
And like within like one, they came back in 1 or 2 months, and one of the subjects of the experiment like knew a lot about that subject, more so than someone who had been like studying in a high school for that period of time.
I think the only differentiating factor here was that they had like sort of like a some guidance from I think it was like a grandma who was helping them, who was guiding them.
I don't think it was an actual grandma, but I think that was the term they used of that learning style. It's like having like the grandma, which is having that person that you can go to and reference ideas or ask for more guidance about the subject.
She kind of would like challenge them, I think, as well.
So yeah. I think going back to like an organic idea here is like having mentors,
mm-hmm.
right? So
having grandmas. Everybody loves a grandma.
Bringing this back to English, right? It's like, this means that you don't have to have a teacher up there teaching you all the time, but having somebody who can guide you and get and serve as a mentor, somebody who can, and this is where I think coaching is really good, and
mm-hmm.
not thinking about yourself more as a teacher, that the student deposits responsibility on you, where it's your responsibility for the student to learn. It's more like the coach who facilitates the process for the student.
Mm-hmm.
Or even just someone who kind of like supports you, you know, and kind of helps you to continue on your path of learning, not give up.
Mm-hmm. And also having someone maybe that you can appear that you could even help them, like teaching them. I think having that balance of like learning and accumulating information at the same time, being able to discuss that with people that are the same level, you know,
mm-hmm. like a colleague.
Yeah, yeah.
So
study buddy,
learning groups, right? People that could serve as your examples, people who can inspire you, people who can help you along.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of the things that you really learn as English learners. That I think is really a problem, a huge problem, as we talked about before, is like hate is going to hate. Confidence. People have huge problems with confidence. People are scared of making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
This is like this thing that's been programmed into learners
mm-hmm.
from very, very early on. So, Mr. V, you've been really digging deep and learning and researching about confidence lately. So why don't you explain this?
Well, I think like there's a really interesting TED Talk that we could put into the show notes from Ken Robinson. It's one of the most viewed ones of all time. I think it's called Do Schools Kill Creativity? And it's totally about how when we're kids, we have no aversion to taking risks, to being really creative and trying things that might not work.
No aversion, no resistance, no problem, right?
Yeah, no problem with that thing. So when we're kids, like we have this, but schools, they really just like, we go into the school system basically because it's, we talked about this last week, they tell us that like failure is a bad thing, you have to pass the test, and this kind of just hammers that creativity out of us.
Just that
hammers creativity out of us?
Yeah.
What does that mean, Mr. V?
It means that it kind of like really hits us over and over again until that creativity, that sort of spirit of trying things and not worrying about failing is like ejected from us.
Mm-hmm.
We get scared of the red marks, right?
Yeah.
We just have this red pen hanging over our head
yeah.
all the mm-hmm. time.
And then on the other side, even if you do well, it's kind of just, you're just doing it usually to pass a test. There's no learning for the sake of learning.
Going back to what we talked about, fixed versus growth mindset, it's like, there's so many people, this is like really one of the fundamental problems of the education system, right? Is
mm-hmm.
that people are studying to take a test and not studying to actually do something in life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think, like, totally when I was in high school taking, like, German, if my teacher had, like, shown me some, like, funny German TV show or something, I would have been much more motivated to understand that than, like, trying to understand the grammatical rules in my textbook, which I wasn't at all. I was, like, very contented with getting passing grades.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that we have been... right now, I personally have been speaking with a lot of people who have previously used our platform, Real Life Global, and we're just getting, like, lots of information about their learning process and their experience with English. And when I ask them, for example, one of the questions is, what is your history with English? So why did you first start learning the language? And most people say they're curious. It's like they want to, like you mentioned, like watching a movie in German. People, the same thing, like with English, if they're watching an English movie with their subtitles or listening to a song, there's like that inner curiosity, like, oh, I wish I could understand this person legitimately without having to rely on some kind of translation, which I'm not even 100% sure if that's accurate or not, you know?
And then you might even, if you have that kind of motivation, whatever that thing is, maybe it's music, maybe it's like watching a TV show, or it's actually like understanding or speaking to someone, then maybe you won't rely so much on the teacher. You're going to take your learning into your own hands, and actually you'll find the way that you need to overcome this difficulty, these obstacles, to be able to understand the music, to understand your friend, whatever.
So it's kind of a problem in the mindset that people are given, the attitude that people are almost cultivated with.
And the fear, like we're talking about, haters gonna hate. It's like there's so many people out there that would be very critical of people who succeed. You know, it's like when you reach that level, like, oh, he's actually getting kind of good. That's what, you know, you're getting good when people start criticizing you, because that's their own, like, their own issues with, like, they're not achieving that. They're not able to get to that level, so they'll start talking shit, or they're going to start hating on you, you know?
Their own insecurities, but what's talking shit about someone?
To talk shit about someone is to just say bad things about them, often behind their back, which is just, like, being a coward.
So, and it could also be, like, lying. Like, if you say, if, you know, you're... talking about something that you have no idea about, like, say, oh, Chad's just talking shit.
You shitting me?
it's more like bullshitting, though, right?
He's bullshitting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We digress.
But, yeah, so confidence in English learners. Think about this as a thought experiment. Think about a native speaker, or a native English speaker, coming to your country and speaking your language. Mm-hmm. How would you feel? Mm-hmm. If he's communicating, he makes mistakes, he has some problems, but you're helping, just communication. Mm-hmm. Do you judge that person? Why would you think a native speaker, because you probably don't judge that person, you probably just want that person to communicate.
Mm-hmm. You can totally see that here in Brazil.
Yeah. So why would you think that a native speaker is going to judge you the way that everybody else you think is judging you?
And maybe if you're afraid of not the native speaker judging you, but another person from your own culture, then that's just you don't even have to worry about it, because that's the hater person, right?
That's that person speaking through their insecurities of them not being able to do what you're doing.
Exactly.
But generally native speakers are much more native English speakers, when you're speaking English with them, they're going to be much more relaxed with you and much less judgmental than you think.
Mm-hmm. And if they're not, screw them, because they're probably not a nice person anyway.
Hate is going to hate.
You need to actually, like, find the people, the community, the, you know, your comrades, your study buddies that are going to support you actually doing that, and surround yourself with people like that, whether it's online or if you can find other people where you're living. Mm-hmm. And that's going to, you know, ignore the fucking haters. And
Mr. V, you're using bad words.
We already dropped the S-bomb. I thought an F-bomb couldn't hurt.
Okay, we did the C-bomb last week as well. That was pretty intense. I'm wonder why we haven't had any hate mail from that yet, you know?
Actually, I think we all did get an email from somebody. If you're out there, what's his name?
I don't want to mention any names. If we're saying bad, we don't want to spread the bad energies around, but you know who we're talking about.
We got a very vulgar email.
Yeah. I think it was like joking around though, right?
Yeah.
Probably a cool dude.
Yeah, so this is a topic we're going to explore more. Definitely, it's so important to English fluency. But let's move on to the next reason why English learners fail. This is because traditional schools misrepresent the living, breathing reality of English.
So what does that mean, the living, breathing reality?
Well, this is beyond grammar. They're telling you the English is this grammatical system of symbols, right? But really, it's like the grammatical system is only there to explain why we speak the way we speak. Grammar didn't come before speaking.
Yeah, grammar is an attempt to explain
and map
what we already do naturally.
And we break rules. We speak in very dynamic ways. We cut our words. We shrink them. We lengthen them. We do crazy shit with our English. I had to say a bad word.
We're bad influences, man.
It's true.
Justin's generally the least potty mouth of us all, right?
Potty? Potty mouth?
Potty mouth? This is an American term.
Is it?
Yeah, we don't... Yeah, we'd never say that.
I feel like it sounds so, like, British, you know, like... Oh, you potty mouth.
Potty is a baby's toilet, right? The little toilet that a baby sits on.
I have to go potty, right?
Okay.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, in general, it's the bathroom, but it's like a childish way of saying it.
Okay.
Okay, so there's this misconception out there that you know, that you're supposed to speak the way that you learn in the grammar books. But the grammar books really, really aren't teaching the way that native speakers really use the language,
You could say it's not teaching you real-life English?
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Good little ring to it.
Yeah, there are two aspects to this. And so this is the first aspect, that native speakers speak much differently than you think. If you watch TV, watch movies, listen to music, you see that we use it in very dynamic ways.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by dynamic ways of using it?
Well, for example, our pronunciation. We always talk about connected speech, right? Like we talked earlier about they hate us because they ain't us, right? Sorry. Internet, you know, that's like a pronunciation rule that it's rarely taught in schools. And okay. So really you need to be, in some sense, people are going to school to understand English as it's spoken in the real world, yet they're not taught to really listen to this. And many,
perceive that, right?
Many people learn that this is actually incorrect. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is how we speak, though.
Yeah. Just so you guys know, if you want to learn more about this type of English, I am making a series on YouTube, the Real Life English YouTube channel, where I'm teaching, for example, two phrasal verbs, but at the end of each video, I'm using that phrasal verb in a normal phrase that's integrating aspects of connected speech, exactly what Justin's talking about. I think, like, for example, just the one I remember, last video I made was to work up the courage. To work up means what, Mr. V?
To, I don't know, you taught it.
Okay.
Develop, right?
Yeah, to slowly, gradually grow, and to work up the courage is to build gradually. And the phrase was, he's working up the courage to ask her out. He's working up the courage to ask her out.
Ask her out. And what is ask someone out?
It's to ask another person out on a date, a romantic encounter, to ask someone out. Mm-hmm. He asked her out.
Asked her, so the age gets removed, and this is another rule of connected speech, right? The mm-hmm. age gets removed so many times in the English language. Ask her, ask him, right? Mm-hmm. But this is something we've explored very in depth in these videos in the Fluent with Friends course as well. Mm-hmm. Real Life Radio, we actually have 40 lessons that transcribes this entire podcast, and we break it down and explain all of the pronunciation, cultural notes, vocabulary, and it's a really great resource.
Yeah, these aspects of connected speech we're talking about right
how,
now.
How could they learn more about that?
We'll just post it in the show notes of this lesson.
Yeah, it ends up being...
this podcast, sorry.
It ends up being... about 40 pages per episode, 30 to 40 pages per episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great way to get in touch with connected speech.
So, back to the topic at hand.
We digress.
So English schools misrepresent the living, breathing reality of the English language, how native speakers really speak. You can learn to imitate us, to understand us as well, to perceive English mm-hmm. the way that it's spoken. It's great for your listening comprehension so you can consume more media, more culture,
more podcasts.
Yeah,
you know, even have been receiving a lot of feedback on the podcast and the way that we speak, and to see your level of how good you are at comprehending English, understanding English. It's like generally people say I'm the easiest to understand. That's level one. Level two is Mr. V. That's when you're like, you're doing pretty good. You can understand Mr. V. Your English comprehension is great. If you can understand Justin. You are pretty much nearly fluent.
He might be a native speaker. I think his own mom can't understand him sometimes.
I think his own mom can't understand him sometimes. Connective speech. I think his own mom can understand him.
Yeah, I think his own mother cannot understand him. His own mom.
Okay, so the other half of this and of the same rule, it misrepresents the living, breathing reality of the English language, is that people think they need to only speak with native speakers. They're forgetting the fact that English is a global language, that there are more non-natives than there are native speakers, and that people are doing business, people are making friends, people are developing relationships with non-natives. English is uniquely positioned as a language for everybody in the world.
Yeah.
It is.
It's, you start thinking of it not only as a tool to communicate with Americans, with Brits, but it's a tool to communicate with anyone from anywhere. Mm-hmm. If you want to travel, if you want to do business, if you just want to connect with people online or in your own city, it's like opens you up to this whole new world of possibilities.
Yeah. I think you should kind of measure your own practicality of using the language, because if you're very focused on like, oh, I have to understand like native speakers, I have to understand 100% of what people are saying.
Or I have to sound like a native speaker even, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, are you even going to really use your English for that? Maybe if you're going to be using your English to like travel around and like meet new people, meet people from different cultures, maybe you don't have to get so stressed out about having to sound exactly like a native speaker. You know?
Or only speak with native speakers, because really there are many ways to learn English.
Mm-hmm. And use kind of English, right?
Yeah, use it for your life.
Yeah.
That's what you need to use it for.
Yeah. Use it confidently, have fun with it, be curious, like Chad was saying before. If you're able to like cultivate curiosity, that's one of the best motivators.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you're interested in, if you want to be able to like understand news, you want to be able to understand what the hell is going on in the States with like the election process, because that's pretty important for what happens to the world, or you just want to understand your favorite music. Mm-hmm. It's that's
how it. Can you criticize Donald Trump in English?
Yeah. Crazy fucker.
Okay, so this is turning R-rated more and more as we move along, but let's go to number five. Number four, this one about misrepresenting the living, breathing reality of English. We'll come back to these. I think we might have a really great podcast for you next week about some of these ideas, but kind of the
talking more about solutions next week, right?
Yeah, so, but number five, the fifth reason why 90% of English learners fail is because of motivation, because people are learning for the wrong reasons. And this is more, we're talking to you out there, podcast listener. Maybe not you. If you're a big real life fan, if you're following what we're doing, then maybe you've really come a long way. But
what would be a wrong reason to learn English?
Well, people learning, Mr. V?
A wrong reason?
Why are people learning for the wrong reasons?
Maybe to get a promotion, if that's your only motivation, because it's, You're going to be learning the language kind of for an external reason of to impress your boss or something. It really needs to be an internal reason if your goal really is fluency.
I think it's find something that really, really innately motivates you.
Mm-hmm. Innately?
Innate means something internal, right? Something inside of you, something that is authentically yours.
Been there since birth, right? Would be the root of that.
So dig down, clarify. Why are you learning English? Is it just to make more money? Is there a bigger reason, a deeper reason?
Would that
reason?
Not be a good motivation? Like, for some people, maybe that is a good motivation, right?
Well, the way I think about it, there's a theory in psychology called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. And this talks about, there's a pyramid with different levels.
Maslow's or Maslow's?
Maslow's. And so, at the base of this pyramid, and the first level is kind of like physiological needs, right? And then it's like,
what is a physiological need?
You need food, like water, air, right, to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And next,
you said
next
that.
Level up is kind of like, you know, work, kind of like kind of survival on a different level, you know, having an income. And then up from that is like relationships, love and belonging. Maybe I'm misrepresenting this pyramid a little bit, but on the top level is self-actualization. So it's like, what are your biggest dreams in life? And so basically the idea
it's
is
a pyramid scheme, man. I don't believe that.
So you can't, if you don't have food or water, you can't really worry so much about working, right?
Probably not that worried about learning English.
Yeah, and so you can't really like worry about the higher levels until you have the lower levels met. And this is why you see people who are, you know, starving to death, you know, stealing, and you know, all sorts of bad things are happening in poverty because they're desperate, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times. And so in the same sense, like, our needs to learn English are kind of like on each level. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have a relationship need to learn English. We do have a need to make more money and to be professionally successful, right?
Yeah.
But on the highest level, really the most motivating thing on this is self-actualization. It's like opening up your perspective to the opportunities in the world, a new perspective on the world.
Yeah, to grow and have this new perspective, I guess it brings a lot of opportunities, like you said, right? I guess, for example, what would be a self-realization with English? Like if somebody gets to that top level and they see English not so much to survive, I mean, they would maybe use English, like, we can post an image of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs in the show notes, mm-hmm. but I think you can hit English, obviously, in the survival level, don't really need it so much, but when it hits to work, or maybe that will make your career maybe better. You will get more money.
Mm-hmm.
Then
more opportunities, more options, right?
Exactly. So that is one level of growing your English. The second level would be connections, meeting people, developing international friendships, mm-hmm. right? Then maybe that third level of what is it again?
Self-actualization.
Self-actualization. Maybe it's like more like information, learning more.
But I think relationships really contribute to that too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
But because right. it's like when you meet people and they teach you, right, from different areas. But it's like, imagine the opening up your horizons to the possibility of who you can be, who you are becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Not career-wise, a lot of times your career is self-actualization, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's also like self-actualization in regards to a career. Maybe you have that realization that the career that you are in is not really fulfilling you. You know, maybe like self-actualization is actually changing your career,
mm-hmm.
or seeing that maybe you can take your career a different path and you'll feel more happier and more content.
And no matter what career you're in, really, like English removes the ceiling. It removes your limitations because the information in English is exponentially better. The training in English and practically any career is exponentially better. The opportunities you have in English are exponentially better.
And it's highly available and free. For the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the traditional education system is not helping people realize that. It's just focusing on really that level, that industrial, you know, cookie cutter educational level of like to get a better job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to become a professional. It's not really appealing to people's higher motivations.
Yeah. I think we should also make the point here that we're not saying that English is the global language that is, you know, superior than other languages and it's taken on this kind of a role. Because I know some people do feel that. They think, oh, you guys are like, saying that English is better than other languages. But I think it's more like, we're not supporting English, but we're supporting the fact that English is actually becoming a global language and it's connecting people and giving people opportunities. That's what we're trying to promote. We're not promoting English as, oh, it's a British English, it's better than American English.
It's a tool.
Although it is.
English is a tool to open up the door to global citizenship in some ways, right?
Exactly, yeah. So we're not preaching English as something that's really good. We're preaching on what English could do to the world.
What's preach?
Preach comes from, I guess it's more of a religious term when you have maybe like a religious leader that is preaching his faith, preaching his belief system, and it sometimes has a negative form of a negative connotation. If I feel like someone's preaching to me, he's trying to like make me believe something that he believes, you know, brainwashing me.
Exactly. We're not brainwashing you, we're just indoctrinating you.
You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. But you guys understand what I'm saying, right? In the sense of like, we're not preaching English as being like the almighty language. It's more like it can do a lot.
It's circumstantial. You know, if Portuguese were the key language to this, I think it would be
very like Portuguese.
Exceptional, yeah. And maybe it is for, you know, the American out there who only speaks English as a native language. Portuguese is that language for him to become a global citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Portuguese, Spanish, people say Mandarin these days, right?
Real life Mandarin, yeah. There you go.
Cool. What's Mandarin?
Chinese, right?
Okay.
Anyways, we've sort of gone over on time. I think this is turning into a long podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. But it's been definitely enjoyable for us to get together and have a nice conversation about this.
Yeah. This is kind of cool for us because we are making the podcast and sharing it with you guys is cool because we actually want to learn more about these subjects ourselves. So just us sitting here, like we mentioned, like the more that you can actually talk with your peers about these kinds of subjects, the more that you can internalize it and it gives you some clarity on certain subjects. That's why it's really cool for us to just sit down and record a podcast about this subject, because we're also learning about it as we talk about it, and we can share it with people all over the world.
And you know what? Here's an invitation. We would really love for you to jump on the show notes on this page and leave a comment. We'd love to start some community dialogue around this.
Yeah, definitely. And that page, in case you're just listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher or somewhere else on the internet, you go to realLifeGlobal.com/theproblem.
Is that with a dash or without a dash?
Without a dash. The problem.
One word.
One word together. TheProblem. The problem.
And if you haven't already, I highly recommend that you go and you sign up for our weekly newsletter. On this newsletter, we give awesome opportunities, special freebies, goodies, and really special stuff that you're not getting on here.
Exactly. Update you on everything that goes, because Real Life is so much more than this podcast. Mm-hmm. You get like all the articles, the videos, everything. Take your English to the next level.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So Chad, really quickly.
Justin, you didn't say oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So you were going to play them out? You had an idea to play them out?
So yes, yes. So today, guys, I'm going to play you out with a really cool... it's a part of one of his lectures from Alan Watts. The actual YouTube video is called Music and Life, I believe, which is what I'm going to share in the show notes, a link to the video. And I'm just going to, before I play you this very quick 2-minute part of his talk, which is about education and the evolution, the industrialization of like the educational system, and just how that maybe, what would you say it does to?
Shoot, sorry.
That's okay.
It's about life, right? It's about life and the purpose of education and life.
Exactly. Yeah, and the musicality. I'm just going to, we'll just play it for you. But before we play you out with this, I'm just going to prepare you by just giving you some of the vocabulary that you're going to hear in this awesome 2-minute talk.
Yeah. And the animation is by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, who are the creators of South Park.
Exactly.
And they went to the university that Justin and I went to, University of Colorado, Boulder.
Oh, yeah.
Go Buffs.
Oh, yeah. Buffs?
Buffs. Is the Buffaloes is the mascot from Colorado, University of Colorado in Boulder.
Okay.
Every university in the States has a mascot.
Okay. What is a mascot?
A mascot is kind of like a symbol. It can be like an animal, something mm-hmm. like that kind of represents the school.
Yeah.
So we're the Buffaloes, Buffs, go Buffs.
Okay. So I'm going to just continue on, just quickly explaining this, and you guys are going to peace out, right?
What does peace out mean?
Peace out means to leave.
Yeah.
All right, peace, Chad.
Going to get some grub.
Can we just hear an oh yeah from you guys before you leave?
Oh yeah.
Alright.
Okay guys, so let me try to prepare you for this awesome part of a talk or a lecture from Alan Watts. Amazing philosopher. So just to get you prepared, some of the things he talks about. He makes a lot of analogies, and he talks about compositions, composers, about music compositions is the arrangement of music, and the composer is the person who arranges that music. He says, hear a crashing chord. A chord is a musical chord, and crashing means very loud. He talks a lot about grade systems. So he's talking about education when you go to first grade, second grade. He even refers to different institutes, like a kindergarten, which is a type of school you go to before you actually start studying. It's for children, very young children, kindergarten, grade school, elementary school. He also makes a noise, it's an expression to say, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Kitty is kitty, K-I-T-T-Y. It's another word for cat. And he makes a reference saying, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Like you're calling a person as if they were an animal. Revving up. To rev up means to gain momentum, to gain excitement. He's revving up for something. He's getting excited. He says you get into some racket. To get into is to become involved in something. And some racket Racket doesn't mean a tennis racket. Racket can be some noisy situation, a noisy environment. In this case, the way that he says it sounds like he's talking about something that is not very useful, some racket, some crappy thing. For example, I think he's talking about working for an insurance company. You get into some racket, some kind of bad job maybe. He talks about a quota. You have to make a quota. So if you're a salesman, for example, you have your quota. Every month you have to sell that much. For example, you have to reach $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 is your quota. And he talks about a slight letdown. A letdown is disappointment. To be let down is to be disappointed. Slight, you're slightly let down. You're a little let down. He talks about a hoax. A hoax is a big organized trick. It's a hoax. It's not real. They're tricking you. They're fooling you. Okay? He also talks about retirement. To retire is when you're old and you don't work anymore. You retire. And lastly, he says, he talks about people missing the point. They miss the point. They don't realize the real importance. They miss those important parts of life. Okay, guys, I know you're going to really, really love this audio, this video. I'll post the video on the show notes of this podcast. And I really hope you enjoy it. And you'll hear from us next week on Real Life Radio. Oh, yeah.
But that it is best understood by analogy with music. Because music, as an art form, is essentially playful. We say you play the piano. You don't work the piano. Why? Music differs from, say, travel. When you travel, you are trying to get somewhere. And of course, we, because being a very compulsive and purposive culture, are busy getting everywhere faster and faster and faster till we eliminate the distance between places. I mean, with the modern jet travel, you can arrive almost instantaneously. And what happens as a result of that is that the two ends of your journey become the same place. So you eliminate the distance, and you eliminate the journey. Because the fun of the journey is to travel, not to obliterate traveling. So then, in music, though, one doesn't make the end of a composition the point of the composition. If that were so, the best conductors would be those who played fastest. And there would be composers who wrote only finales. People go to a concert just to hear one crashing chord, because that's the end. Same way in dancing. You don't aim at a particular spot in the room. That's where you should arrive. The whole point of the dancing is the dance. Now, but we don't see that as something brought by our education into our everyday conduct. We've got a system of schooling which gives a completely different impression. It's all graded. And what we do is we put the child into the corridor of this grade system with a kind of, come on, kitty, kitty, kitty. And yeah, you go to kindergarten, you know. And that's a great thing, because when you finish that, you'll get into first grade. And then, come on, first grade leads to second grade, and so on, and then you get out of grade school, and you've got high school, and it's revving up, the thing is coming, then you're going to go to college, and by Jove, then you get into graduate school, and when you're through with graduate school, you go out to join the world. And then you get into some racket where you're selling insurance, and they've got that quota to make, and you're going to make that, and all the time, the thing is coming, it's coming, it's coming, that great thing, the success you're working for. Then when you wake up one day about 40 years old, you say, my God, I've arrived. I'm there. And you don't feel very different from what you always felt. And there's a slight letdown because you feel there's a hoax. And there was a hoax, a dreadful hoax. They made you miss everything by expectation. Look at the people who live to retire and put those savings away. And then when they're 65,
They don't have any energy left. They're more or less impotent. And they go and rot in an old people's, senior citizens' community. Because we've simply cheated ourselves the whole way down the line. We thought of life by analogy with a journey, with a pilgrimage, which had a serious purpose at the end, and the thing was to get to that end, success or whatever it is, or maybe heaven after you're dead. But we missed the point the whole way along. It was a musical thing, and you were supposed to sing or to dance while the music was being played.